Well, it's time. I'm very sleepy and I want to do the study before I fall asleep or get too tired to do it. It's December 29th, 2022, and it's 1841 hours. My name is Ward Green. Welcome, little children and others, and those who are new to the study. I want to first of all talk about the weather a bit, because it's been really warm today, and now it's going to be warmer, they're saying, for the next few days and raining. So all the snow that we got will probably melt, or not all of it, maybe, well, possibly, but we had so much. We had more snow in the past few weeks or days. I don't know how long it's been since we had that really big snowfall, but yesterday I was out, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday, yeah. And then I was out today to trim or to clear a little bit of snow that the snowplow pushed onto my driveway. But yesterday I did, it was 6 inches of snow. Like, and it was heavier than, I'm trying to think, was it heavier than the snow we had? I think it was heavier than the snow we had when we had the 12 inches. But this was like 6 inches everywhere. It wasn't just 12 inches in some places. This was 6 inches everywhere, virtually. It was bad. But the problem was, it actually wasn't that bad. It wasn't, it definitely wasn't as much as when we had the 12 inches. It only took me a couple of hours to clear it. But, and the problem was I wasn't able to get warmed up to get my second wind, you know. I mean, by the time I got my second wind, I was done. When you get your second wind and you're just, you know, you're grinding, because I ate food prior to shoveling, which is always a bad idea. But, I mean, I wanted to, I ate food for several hours, you know, gradually preparing myself to do this work. I wanted to be well nourished, but it, you know, it's not the best idea because you end up taking longer to get your second wind. So, like, you have to get through that process of digesting the food before you can really start to work and feel good. So I didn't feel good until the very end, but I was at that point quite tired, and I was you know, just starting to get my second wind at that point, where I could have kept working for another, you know, hour or two, or probably many hours if I needed to, without any discomfort. That's the thing, because you know, my body was starting to at that point probably burn fat or something, whatever it was doing, whatever that second wind is. So anyway, more shoveling, and then today I got the new broom, and what else did I get? The snow shovel, the sleigh shovel, which I think I'm going to store for when the other shovel wears out or something like that. I might break it out any time, but it's in the basement, I think, for now. It's not as big a shovel as I would have hoped. Maybe I can order another one sometime. I don't know. But the problem with ordering without, you know, seeing anything, like the sight unseen, mail order, you know, without seeing the object, is they always lie about the size. They lie about the details. They exaggerate things so that you don't get what you think you're going to get. That's not always, I guess, but in the vast 99% majority of cases, they lie. So I got a smaller shovel than I was hoping for, but I didn't actually measure my shovel. But they advertised 22 inches for this shovel, I believe, not 19, which is what it really is. And, you know, you could call it 21, I guess, but it's not 22 by any stretch. So 21 inches, is, you know, but that's not 21 useful inches, it's 19 inches. So I can't say I'm pleased with the size of the shovel. Smaller just means I have to push snow more times, right? Now, maybe as I get older, you know, the thing is, Jehovah knows better than I do. Maybe as I get older, I'll appreciate the fact I have a smaller shovel. Oh, the other thing is, It'll fit better on my front porch when I'm clearing the porch. Every inch matters there because the tight clearances of trying to squeeze it in between the snow protective, the snow blocking shield that I built and the rest of the porch, trying to squeeze the shovel in there. It's going to work better to have a smaller one. So Jehovah knows that it's probably better to have that smaller one. That's the way things are, right? I'm not going to, certainly would never send something back. Because, I mean, that's something I would have done when I was, an adolescent or something. Or, much less mature than I am now. I'm much more stoic about, people who lie about what they're selling. I'm much more willing to joyfully accept the plundering of my belongings, as the scripture says. Well, I guess we should start our study. I want to get it done quickly, but it's a long one. Today, with Psalm 89, it's a different psalm. It's a maskil of Ethan the Ezrahite instead of Heman the Ezrahite. This one is by Ethan the Ezrahite, Psalm 89. But it's going to be interesting to see. I can't get to the store. That's the thing. So I can't go and get the fresh. Well, I can walk. I can walk to the store and buy a few fresh items like apples and pineapple and then come back. That's what I might do. Because we're going to have rain for 2 days, it looks like, and then we're going to have snow. And I don't like to drive during rain or snow. So, because it's no good for the car. But Monday might be good as far as dry, but I want the roads to be very dry. It looks like bad weather for the next umpteen days. I don't know how long. Bad weather. There are no days where it says 0% probability of precipitation and sunshine. We have none of that. Oh, and it's just one. Friday, January 6th. That might be a good day. But the day before that, we might get some ice and so on. So, I mean, it's just, there's nothing visible there as to a good prospect for driving or riding a bike or anything. I think I'm going to walk. That's what I think. Now that I've got all the good, I've got the Merrell boots, I've got the good hiking boots like that, I can walk, miles probably in those boots. But we'll see. I'll talk about some other things later, but all my orders are arrived now. I'm thinking about ordering some more tarps, actually. I'd like to get one large tarp if I could. A really good quality one, and I don't know if I want to do that, because then there's always a chance that if I leave it out somewhere, somebody could come and take it, I guess. I shouldn't worry about that, right? It's something that I never really needed to think about when I bought the cheaper plastic tarps. But if I buy a canvas tarp, anybody could come and take it, and they charge a fortune for these things. I mean, some of them are complete scams, where they charge $3,000 for a 10x12 tarp, or some ridiculous thing like that, or even if it's 16 feet by 20 feet, it shouldn't be $3,000. I don't care what it's made of. It would have to be diamond encrusted and made of solid gold or something, to be worth that. I mean, that's just crazy. But I mean, it's just nuts the way there are scams on Amazon. You have to be aware there are definitely scams on Amazon. And even if there aren't, even if you don't buy them, even if you buy a good item, you still can get shortchanged somewhere along the way. So it's very much buyer beware. But anyway, let's do our study. Now, the theme for today is going to be, there are many first who will be last, and the last will be first. And that's an interesting theme. It's from Matthew chapter 19. And we'll see whether Psalms is in line with that or not. Psalm 89. Maskil of Ethan the Ezrahite. Ethan the Ezrahite. I got to blow my nose first before we start here. I definitely used my thumb today. I used my thumb today a lot more than usual. Oh, I was out today working on the rope. I had to replace a rope for my car cover. And I had to go and I had to cut it and melt the rope. So I used my propane torch because there's no way a match would do it in this with the windiness out there. Or there's no way a lighter could do it. I needed to use a propane torch. But I melted it and I had to tie it behind the front wheels so that it wouldn't disappear like it did last time. I don't know what happened to it, the old rope. But that was fortunate. I had some more of that rope. I could just cut a new one. But it's been replaced. I sprayed the tarp again with some peppermint spray or all around it again because of all the strange weather we've had with rain and so on. Or melting. Melting. We haven't had rain yet, but we've had melting. And that kind of destroys, probably washes away the peppermint smell a little bit. But Maskil of Ethan the Ezrahite, Jehovah's expressions of loving kindness, I will sing about even to time indefinite. For generation after generation, I shall make your faithfulness known with my mouth. For I have said, loving kindness will stay built even to time indefinite. As for the heavens, you keep your faithfulness firmly established in them. I have concluded a covenant toward my chosen one. I have sworn to David my servant. Even to time indefinite, I shall firmly establish your seed, and I will build your throne to generation after generation. Selah. And the heavens will laud your marvelous act, O Jehovah. Yes, your faithfulness in the congregation of the holy ones. For who in the skies can be compared to Jehovah? Who can resemble Jehovah among the sons of God? God is to be held in awe among the intimate group of holy ones. He is grand and fear-inspiring over all who are round about him. O Jehovah, God of armies, who is vigorous like you, O Jah? And your faithfulness is all around you. You are ruling over the swelling of the sea. When it raises its waves, you yourself calm them. You yourself have crushed Rahab, even as someone slain. By the arm of your strength, you have scattered your enemies. Heaven is yours. The earth also is yours, the productive land and what fills it. You yourself have founded them. The north and the south, you yourself created them. Tabor and Hermon, in your name they cry out joyfully. An arm with mightiness is yours. Your hand is strong. Your right hand is exalted. Righteousness and judgment are the established place of your throne. Loving kindness and trueness themselves come in before your face. Happy are the people knowing the joyful shouting. O Jehovah, in the light of your face they keep walking. In your name they are joyful all day long, and in your righteousness they are exalted. For you are the beauty of their strength, and by your goodwill our horn is exalted. For our shield belongs to Jehovah, and our king belongs to the Holy One of Israel. At that time you spoke in a vision to your loyal ones, and you proceeded to say, I have placed help upon a mighty one. I have exalted a chosen one from among the people. I have found David my servant. with my holy oil I have anointed him, with whom my own hand will be firm, whom my own arm also will strengthen. No enemy will make exactions upon him, neither will any son of unrighteousness afflict him. And from before him I crushed his adversaries to pieces, and to those intensely hating him I kept dealing out blows. And my faithfulness and my loving kindness are with him, and in my name his horn is exalted. And on the sea I have put his hand, and on the rivers his right hand. He himself calls out to me, "You are my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation." Also, I myself shall place him as firstborn, the most high of the kings of the earth. To time indefinite I shall preserve my loving kindness toward him, and my covenant will be faithful to him. And I shall certainly set up his seed forever, and as his throne, and his throne as the days of heaven. I'm having trouble, struggling with the fact that I just woke up, basically, from a little snooze. If his sons leave my law, and in my judicial decisions they do not walk, if they profane my own statutes, and they do not keep my own commandments, I must also turn my attention to their transgression, even with a rod, and to their error, even with strokes. But my loving kindness I shall not break off from him, nor shall I prove false with regard to my faithfulness. I shall not profane my covenant, and the expression out of my lips I shall not change. Once I have sworn in my holiness to David I will not tell lies, his seed itself will prove to be even to time indefinite, and his throne as the sun in front of me. As the moon, it will be firmly established for time indefinite, and as a faithful witness in the skies, Selah. But you have cast off, and you keep contemning. You have become furious toward your anointed one. You have spurned the covenant of your servant. You have profaned his diadem to the very earth. You have broken down all his stone pens. You have laid his fortifications in ruin. All those passing along the way have pillaged him. He has become a reproach to his neighbors. You have exalted the right hand of his adversaries. You have caused all his enemies to rejoice. What is more, you again treat his sword as a foe. And you have caused him not to gain ground in the battle. You have made him cease from his luster, and his throne you have hurled to the very earth. You have shortened the days of his youth. You have enwrapped him with shame, Selah. How long, O Jehovah, will you keep yourself concealed? For all time? Will your rage keep on burning just as a fire? Remember of what duration of life I am. Is it all in vain that you have created all the sons of men? What able-bodied man is there alive who will not see death? Can he provide escape for his soul from the hand of Sheol? Selah. Where are your former acts of loving kindness, O Jehovah, about which you swore to David in your faithfulness? Remember, O Jehovah, the reproach upon your servants, my carrying in my bosom the reproach of all the many peoples, how your enemies have reproached, O Jehovah, how they have reproached the footprints of your anointed one. Blessed be Jehovah to time indefinite. Amen and amen. And that was Psalm 89. I think the key here to this comparison of Psalm 89 with Matthew 19 is clearly the idea of David being first. There was something about first in here. In 27, I myself shall place him as firstborn, talking about David. This is talking about the promise that Jehovah made to David, that he would set up David's throne for time indefinite. You know, that he would set up the throne of David, and it would be like the moon. It would be firmly established like the moon in verse 37. And his throne would be like the sun in front of Jehovah, because it would be lasting, long-lasting, like the sun is a long-lasting light in the heavens, a luminary. And David's throne was to be long-lasting, and he even calls it firstborn. Was that 27? Yeah, 27. I myself shall place him as firstborn. So when we're going to see in Matthew that the first will be last and the last first, that's the concept that's going to be encountered in the book of Matthew today when we read it in chapter 19. So there the idea of firstborn is also the idea of being born last or later, someone who's made king later. And the later king would become superior, just like Jesus came after David, but he became superior to David, because he became the king of the universe. Jehovah appointed him to rule over all creation, including mankind, because of his rendering his own life as a sacrifice for the sins of mankind, but for the sin of Adam, and once for all time, paying the sin, paying for the sin of that perfect, or the sin of Adam, who was a perfect man, and paying the value of that perfect life once for all time, would then serve as a payment for, I'm trying to think where I read something at one point about it being that the value of Jesus' ransom sacrifice can pay for any life, all sin, everywhere. But I'm trying to think if that's true, if there's life on other planets, whether that pays for the sin of those other extraterrestrials, or I think the once for all time idea might imply that, right? That's the thing. But it's because the value of a perfect life is so great. Like, a perfect life is such a large thing. But it only pays for one perfect life, you would think, which was Adam's. So I'm thinking, I don't see how it does apply to other extraterrestrials, but or why, I don't see why Jesus would be the king of the universe as opposed to the king of mankind, you know, in the earthly kingdom and the heavenly administration, the heavenly kingdom over the earthly, or the earthly society of mankind. That's what Jesus was appointed over. Whether he rules over the whole universe, we would have to, you know, consider that as a separate topic. But Jesus was appointed to be a greater king than David was. That's for certain. And he was also appointed to be a priest after the manner of Melchizedek too, except that he was greater than Melchizedek, even, of course, because Melchizedek was a mortal who died, a sinful mortal who died and did not have power as priest forever, which Jesus does have. There's a difference. So Jesus was greater than David as a king, but he was also greater than Melchizedek as a priest, and he is greater than David, and he was and is greater than Melchizedek. But I mean, all of these things are different about Jesus. So he was more the last, like the last Adam, he's called. I think that's in Corinthians. chapter 15. That's what I think. Okay. The first man Adam became a king. No, a living soul. Not a king. Where did I see that? I thought I saw the word king there, but I'm sleepy here. The first man, Adam, became a living soul. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. And Jesus is, of course, the last Adam. Because he lived a perfect life such as Adam was intended to live, and he paid the price for Adam's sin. That's 1 Corinthians 15 and 45 about the last Adam. So the last will be first. Applies in that way as well, but it applies to Psalm 89, where David is called firstborn, the most high of the kings of the earth. Now let's read now. I mean, this is a marvelous poetic psalm, setting up his seed. I shall certainly set up his seed forever, verse 29. And I love the poetry where it says, his throne will be as the sun in front of me, you know, as the moon, a faithful witness in the skies. Beautiful poetic words. But there were many who did not obey Jehovah. They were furious toward Jehovah's anointed one, toward David. In verse 38, they were furious toward David, and they profaned his diadem in verse 39, his crown, in other words. They didn't respect him as king. And so, how long, again, verse 46, bringing back the memory of Brother Dellinger's talk about how long, O Jehovah, will you keep yourself concealed? Psalm 89:46. And also the idea of the ransom. What able-bodied man can provide escape for his soul from death? In verse 48, the hand of Sheol being death, Sheol being the grave. We all go to the grave because we die, so what able-bodied man among us can provide escape for our own soul from death? And that highlights the need for the ransom. We need deliverance from death if we're going to live forever. Otherwise, we're going to die. So Jesus is that ransom as well. So that's tied in verse 48. But we don't want Jehovah to forget the enemies of his servants. In verse 50, we want him to remember, because we want him to execute justice eventually, finally. So let's go to Matthew chapter 19. I wish I were wide awake, but I'm not. I had 4 hours sleep last night, that's the reason. And I wanted to get up to receive my packages, so I got my packages, and, you know, I've been sleepy, I guess, all day. I've been sitting, sleeping in my chair here for off and on during this early evening here. Now, when Jesus had finished these words, he departed from Galilee and came to the frontiers of Judea across the Jordan. He was talking about how we need to forgive our brothers. Also, great crowds followed him, and he cured them there. And Pharisees came up to him, intent on tempting him, and saying, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife on every sort of ground?" Brother Lucioni talked about Jehovah hating divorce. In reply, he said, "Did you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female?" I'm just trying to remember if I got Brother Robert's name right there. If because it's an Italian name that has other variants, I think, or there are other similar names in Italian. Did you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and his mother and will stick to his wife and the two will be one flesh, so that they are no longer two but one flesh? Therefore, what God has yoked together, let no man put apart. They said to him, why then did Moses prescribe giving a certificate of dismissal and divorcing her? He said to them, Moses, out of regard for your hard-heartedness, made the concession to you of divorcing your wives. But such has not been the case from the beginning. I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except on the ground of fornication and marries another commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if such is the situation of a man with his wife, it is not advisable to marry. He said to them, not all men make room for the saying, but only those who have the gift. For there are eunuchs that were born such from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs that were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs that have made themselves eunuchs on account of the kingdom of the heavens. Let him that can make room for it, make room for it. Talking about the saying, the word of God, make room for the preaching work, in other words, as opposed to marrying and raising a family, we can make room for the preaching work instead. Then young children were brought to him for him to put his hands upon them and offer prayer. That's nice. But the disciples reprimanded them. Jesus, however, said, let the young children alone and stop hindering them from coming to me, for the kingdom of the heavens belongs to such like ones. And he put his hands upon them and went from there. Now look, a certain one came up to him and said, teacher, what good must I do in order to get everlasting life? He said to him, why do you ask me about what is good? One there is that is good. If though you want to enter into life, observe the commandments continually. He said to him, which ones? Jesus said, why, you must not murder, you must not commit adultery, you must not steal, you must not bear false witness, honor your father and your mother, and you must love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to him, I have kept all these. What yet am I lacking? Jesus said to him, if you want to be perfect, go sell your belongings and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come be my follower. When the young man heard this saying, he went away grieved, for he was holding many possessions. But Jesus said to his disciples, truly I say to you that it will be a difficult thing for a rich man to get into the kingdom of the heavens. Again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to get through a needle's eye than for a rich man to get into the kingdom of God. When the disciples heard that, let's talk about that for a minute. Now, the idea of a camel going through a needle's eye, there's two interpretations of that. One is there was a place near Jerusalem called the needle's eye. And it was a narrow place where a camel would have difficulty getting through. The other thing it means is a camel is a thick rope. And the thick rope would have difficulty getting through a needle's eye, right? So that was the meaning of that saying. When the disciples heard that, they expressed very great surprise, saying, who really can be saved? Looking them in the face, Jesus said to them, with men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. Then Peter said to him in reply, look, we have left all things and followed you. What actually will there be for us? Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, in the recreation, when the Son of Man sits down upon his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also yourselves sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone that has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for the sake of my name will receive many times more and will inherit everlasting life. But many that are first will be last, and the last first. That was Matthew 19. The idea of last first and first last. That is explained in another illustration that Jesus gives, which we will see later in our studies, I'm sure, at some point. It's in the scriptures, so it's an idea that we can think about later. And not now, because I'm too sleepy to proceed, I think, with our study any further. I think it's been a good study, though. I think that was very instructive, to do with the idea of not being divorced or not getting a divorce. If we go home here, let's see what we got. Yeah, maybe I can drag this. I can possibly, but not very far. Okay. Yeah. Well, you can't see what I'm looking at anyway. I suppose, seeing as I am so tired, sleepy, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to wake up again at some point. That's the thing. I'm just sleepy right now, and I'll be going to bed and getting up tomorrow. And what day is it? Thursday. Today's garbage day. I need to put the garbage out today. Today's the only day for a long time when we're not going to have any rain or snow. It was a beautiful day. I was out replacing that rope, and it was a beautiful day. It's just that I couldn't go to the store because it would put a lot of salt or water on the bottom of my car, seeing as the roads are still very messy, and it's just they're not dry. The roads aren't dry enough, I think, was my understanding of the road conditions, and that's why I don't like to drive, because it makes my electronics go haywire in my car, so I don't do that, so I just can't go out today. But it was perfect weather for it. But we just had so much snow recently, and such a messy, because of the warming up now, we've got puddles, and I'm sure we've got puddles somewhere, and we've got a lot of wet snow on the ground in the parking lots and things like that. That's not going to be a good thing to go drive in with an old car that has electronic issues, so it's a beautiful, my car is fine, it's just, it has a lot of electronic issues. It's mechanically quite sound, I believe, very sound. It's just these electronic issues. And it says SRS, the SRS light comes on, which means that I don't have airbags. Because every time, the SRS light's not on when I first put my battery in the car, but when I disconnect the battery later on, after I go to the store, and come out and reconnect the battery, the SRS light comes on, which means no airbags. So I've got no airbags, but I'm only driving 1 mile, so it's not like, and I'm not driving at high speed, so I don't think I need airbags. I'm fine. I'm not going to drive that car on the highway, I think, now, because it doesn't have airbags. But I mean, let's talk about safety. Let's talk about that, because this is such a nonsensical thing, where people are continually claiming that they need the latest technology so they can have safety. in their cars, for example. They want all the latest safety equipment in their cars. And now airbags are fine if they don't go off when they're not supposed to and break your hands or break your, you know, you can break your wrists or you can be seriously injured. You can get a concussion from an airbag. If it goes off at the wrong time, you can be killed by an airbag if it goes off at the wrong time. It's not necessarily a safety feature of a car because it can malfunction. So, I mean that's one thing, but all the safety features of a car, people want to put their faith in technological safety features of, you know, man-made technology, just like putting your faith in a doctor, for heaven's sake. So ridiculous. Why would you put your faith in a doctor when you're not even careful about what food you're eating at all, and you don't care about what vitamins you take, and you don't care about anything about your own habits to do with eating, or you don't care whether you take drugs or not? That's the other thing. Drugs are such a poisonous thing. They're all poison. That's why they're called drugs. They're not vitamins or food per se. Now, there are some drugs or vitamins that they attempt to call drugs and make them prescription, but if it's a vitamin, it's not technically a drug. But, you know, if it's administered intravenously, for example, then of course it's a lot more like a drug. You can't say that that's a food. Obviously it's not taken through the digestive tract, you know. So I'm talking about foods, vitamins and foods. Those that you eat, that you take into your digestive tract. If we don't even pay attention to those things, why would we then think it's a good idea to go to a doctor who administers poison in the form of drugs? I mean, this is so nonsensical and backwards to think that you're being safe by going to a doctor. And you're not putting any effort into your own safety. Like with a car, you buy the most expensive car and then you drive with abandon. But your car has safety equipment, so you think you're safe. That's nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense at all. You could drive with a car that has no airbags, no safety features. You know, even you could drive a car that has no seatbelts, because it was made in a time when there were no seatbelts. And you could still be safe based on how you drive and how you think when you're driving. You know, we've heard of defensive driving, or we should have been taught about defensive driving, right? Well, defensive living. When we eat defensively to prevent death or to prevent disease. One way is to make sure we take adequate calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K2. Those are essential for health. And we saw, if you saw the talk the other day that I presented, at least part of which I presented, the interview by Dr. Mercola of Dr. Kate Raelm-Blue, the Canadian naturopath doctor who's the expert on vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 produces proteins. And it's not toxic in any form that we know of. So you can eat as much vitamin K2 as you want. It will produce these proteins that will then serve calcium in such a way as to allow calcium to do its proper thing and remove calcium from places where it's not supposed to be, in the soft tissues. Put it into the bones where it's supposed to be. These proteins do that. But without vitamin K2, they cannot be produced. And vitamin D is used by vitamin K2 in order to produce those proteins. And if you take vitamin D without vitamin K2, she was saying, vitamin D creates a need for vitamin K2. And so it's toxic because of that. Vitamin D is toxic because it creates a need for K2. And you may experience severe heart problems because of taking vitamin D with calcium if you don't take K2. You need vitamin K2. So she talked about all those things and how vitamin K2 in itself is not harmful. But you always take vitamin K2 with vitamin D, with calcium, and with magnesium too. Those things are all healthy. You don't get kidney stones, she explained, when you take vitamin K2. You don't get heart attacks when you take vitamin K2. You don't get diabetes when you take vitamin K2. You don't get Alzheimer's when you take vitamin K2. All those things, those risks are reduced by the use of vitamin K2, which is a natural, essential part of a diet. You can now, in years past, there were a lot more grass-fed foods we could have eaten and drunk, such as milk, which is from grass-fed animals and so on. Today, we can still eat Gouda and Brie, which has bacterially produced vitamin K2, and we can still take vitamin K2 supplements in the form of MK4, for example, and MK7, which she said was preferable. My ratio is 3 milligrams of vitamin MK4, in other words, vitamin K2 in the form of MK4, the short chain form of it, which is called menotetranone, by the way. 3 milligrams of menotetranone, or MK4, in direct correspondence with 6 times 120 micrograms, or in other words, roughly 700 micrograms of MK7. So I take 30 to 7, about a 4-to-1 ratio. A 4-to-1 ratio of MK4 to MK7 is the ratio I'm taking right now. That's what instinctively, my instinct tells me to do that. I'm not basing it on some, you know, intellectual theory. My instinct is telling me that's what I should do, and I do it. So as my body, you know, adapts or changes due to the nourishment that I'm getting through the food I'm eating, my instincts may change, and I may adjust that instinctively, right? I mean, that's the way instinct always works. It's capable of telling us. So we listen to our bodies, but I'm also taking with every 120 micrograms of vitamin K2 in the MK7 form, I get 1,000 units of vitamin D3. And with every 100 micrograms of MK4, that form of vitamin K2, with every 100 micrograms of MK4, I'm taking 500 units of vitamin D3, because that's the ratio in which they're existing within the supplement. The essential nature of vitamin K2 is that it needs vitamin D. So typically when you take vitamin K2, it comes with vitamin D along with it. It comes with vitamin D included, and that's the ratio in which it's included in the supplements I'm taking. So I'm taking, you know, 3 milligrams of, or 30 drops of MK4, which would be 30 times 500 or 15,000 units of vitamin D with the MK4, and that's 15,000 units, right? But vitamin D is going to be creating a need for vitamin K2 when the K2 is present. So if I didn't need that, if the vitamin D caused some toxicity, I'd get sick. You know, I'd feel it. So, but the other thing is, that's the MK4. The MK7, I'm taking 1,000 units with each of those 6 MK7. Every time I have a meal, I'm taking 30 and 6. 15,000, and then with the 6 MK7, I'm getting 6,000, so it's like 21,000 units of vitamin D every time I have a meal that has K2 in it. So that's the ratio I'm taking right now. So if I have a yogurt or a bowl of yogurt or a bowl of matcha tea latte, I always will have the 30 drops or 3 milligrams of MK4, 6 times 120 micrograms or 7 milligrams of MK7, and a total of 21,000 units of vitamin D every time as well. So that vitamin D is 6,000 of which my intestines can use to help me absorb minerals at one time. That leaves, you know, six. If my body has that many receptors, it might have fewer because I'm not the biggest person. But I mean, if it has six, then that leaves 15,000 units of vitamin D to do other things in my body, whatever other things it could do. There are vitamin D receptors not just in the intestines. There are other places in the body where there are vitamin D receptors. So I believe that this vitamin D is essential, that we take it. Now, I'm taking that every meal. I'm taking that many. So I may not have to continue that as time goes on. I might be able to reduce it. And, in fact, I might have to reduce it if it's toxic. But I would never take a drug, because a drug is poison to the body. The body would think it's getting food. The body doesn't know any better. So you're abusing your body when you take drugs, because your body expects food, doesn't expect drugs. I mean, it doesn't expect a chemical, which is not a food. So it will try to take it as a food. It will try to interpret it as a food, and it will process it to using hundreds and thousands of different chemical reactions that the body produces to process a chemical. It will attempt to process everything you put into it. And these drugs have severe effects on the brain. All of them do. Because the brain is a very sensitive organ. I mean, even something like, I didn't read it, I watched it on YouTube. Ken Block, the rally driver, he experienced an accident where he said ibuprofen. He concluded later it was the fact he took ibuprofen, in like Advil, for example, that caused his accident, because it disconnects the ears from the brain. So his navigator was telling him, this corner's dangerous, slow down, and he didn't get the message. And they had an accident. And he later attributed that the only way he could explain it was it must have been the ibuprofen he took because of the previous accident he had. And he was taking too much, or he was taking some. The thing is, you shouldn't take any ibuprofen ever. That's the message. Ever, 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 ever. Never take it. And I looked up CBD, right? They're using it to treat anxiety in people, because it's the non, it's, well, it's supposed to be the non-intoxicating, the non-mind-altering part of cannabis, right? It's cannabidiol, which is it's a different form, a different chemical from the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the hallucinogenic or mind-altering part of cannabis or marijuana. But the cannabidiol has all these effects that it alters perception and the brain, and it causes, it's addictive. And it has properties, it does all kinds of things that you do not want to do, basically, is what it does. And they claim, because it reduces anxiety, right? It cuts off the signals that cause anxiety. Just like when you take marijuana, it stops you from worrying. You feel happier because you're not worried, because it cuts off all the worrying. But worry is useful to a human being. It causes us to go out and repair our tarps when they have holes in them or whatever. You know, it causes us to do things to prevent catastrophe. I mean, worry is a useful thing. But some people can't deal with their anxieties. I just cannot understand why the approach would be to use a drug to treat anxiety. Except I know that there are suicides, and that's the reason why they do it. But I can't understand why that would be superior to using nutrition to give a person complete health so that they don't worry because they don't have anxiety disorders because they have their health. I mean, we need the problem with drugs, okay? The problem with any drug is that once you open the door, it's like Pandora's box. You can't close it again. If you open the door to one drug, I don't care if it's Advil or ibuprofen, Tylenol, I mean, Tylenol is a different form. I guess acetaminophen or whatever. But, or aspirin. I don't care what the drug is. It doesn't matter. If you open the door to any drug, you're opening the door to all of them. And then you've got a complex, you know, you've got the ability to use any of them, but you've also introduced an overwhelming complexity from which you will never recover. You'll never recover from that complexity. You'll never benefit from the simplicity that comes from eliminating all drugs. Eliminate all drugs. That's the only way to do it. Then you can at least reduce the complexity down to something that can be dealt with. And you won't have the continual, uncontrollable temptation to use any and all substances for any and all purposes, which makes no sense at all. And never can be logical, because it doesn't belong in the body. It's a poison. All of it is poison, okay? Anything that's not food is poison, plain and simple. But, I mean, it's such a big topic. But all you have to do is eliminate, if you just eliminate all the drugs, it's not a big topic anymore. And then we don't have to talk about that anymore, right? I mean, I could talk about this. If I have to study every single drug just to refute every single usage, why CBD is wrong and why all these things are wrong. I read the studies they did on CBD. I just am not impressed at all, because they're all biased towards the treatment of some illness using a drug to remove a symptom. And that's not the way to treat illness. You don't want to remove a symptom. What you want to do is treat holistically the whole body to make it healthy. It's got to be holistic. So, I mean, the whole idea of you can't be holistic when you're treating the body with substances that it doesn't use. That's just ridiculous nonsense. It just is so nonsensical. And that's why drugs are wrong. That's why the Bible's against drugs and talks about it as sorcery and spiritism, because it's wrong. And the medical profession is completely oblivious to the reality of drugs being wrong. So that means to go to a doctor is one of the most dangerous or the worst things you could ever do. Absolutely. Absolutely it is. And it's taken me my 65 years of life, almost 66 now, to get to the point where I could see that clearly and say that definitively. This is Ward Green, December 29th, 2022. It's 1938 hours. I love you. Have a great day. Bye for now. Seek first the kingdom, and all these other things will be added to you. God bless you.